Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 12. What if your dad wasn't your real dad?
It wasn't a straight kind of path. It was always kind of a crooked path from the beginning in terms of like curveballs here and there that added to this whole trippy story. My mom came from Guatemala when she was like 18 or 19. When I was born, I think she was 19. I met my dad when I was 6. He came from El Salvador. He was a political refugee from El Salvador. He was a teacher out there from like 1980 to 1992, there was a civil war, officially a civil war in El Salvador that the U.S. sponsored. Basically, the U.S. gave El Salvador the equivalent of $1 million a day for 12 years to their right-wing militaristic regime. And at the time, El Salvador was like the second poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. The government was killing people left, right, and torturing and disappearing people. And it was typical of Latin American fascist, you know, very brutal governments. There was like a huge government backlash against, you know, teachers and union organizers and priests, even because they were advocating for the poor and whatnot. He had been actually captured at one point and like just totally, basically tortured and left for dead. He came to the United States and filed for political asylum. That was around when I was 6, you know, and my parents got married. That's where it gets interesting, because the truth of the matter was that they hadn't met before, but I thought, they pretty much told me that was my dad, and so I grew up, that's who raised me, so in a sense it was my dad, but I didn't know that. They told me, it was pretty much, they... You know, when you're that young, you don't even question, you just sort of, you know, you're too young to even know what is what in terms of like, I was pretty much told that was my biological father and I didn't do the math or anything. I didn't know, you know. I didn't have brothers or sisters. I didn't have, you know, all my mom's family was in Guatemala. My dad, his family was in El Salvador, but he wasn't really in touch with them very much because they were all scattered about. A lot of them had died. My early years, like the first 5 years, you could say it was maybe like I'd see my mom like, I don't know, once a week or some, maybe once or twice a week. But for the most part, I was living in this other situation that was, you know, for a little child, is really hard. I was pretty lonely and depressed in a sense, you know, because I wasn't seeing my mom. It was just kind of a basic thing. You're a little kid, you want to be with your mom. And so when my mom met my dad, it was like, you know, he was a really good dad. He was a really cool guy. And so they got married and, you know, it was a chance for things to become stable and all live together. And, you know, things improved at that point. You know, when I was like in high school, maybe when I was about 17 or 18 was when I started to learn about his past as a political refugee. I already knew about it, but then I started to sort of read in depth more, like he had a file and all this paperwork about, you know, what had happened in El Salvador, you know, and it was really brutal, trippy stuff. I did international relations, and I was doing a master's in Latin American studies at UC Berkeley after state. That's kind of where it began, you know, like a certain amount of distrust in, you know, like the mainstream kind of status quo story, connecting the dots and realizing, okay, this is happening in the Middle East, in Africa, in Latin America, and wow, okay, this is intense. Then when I was 20, my dad unexpectedly died. When I was about 16, when I was like a sophomore in high school, he got a work injury. He fell at work. He was a cook at a restaurant. He was working two jobs to try to like make more money for, you know, help out. And then he was just overworked, I guess, and he fell and he hurt his knee. Basically, for the next 4 years, he was collecting some like workers' comp, that kind of thing. And it was taking a lot of time and red tape to like get an operation to actually occur and be paid for and all that. And all in all, it took 4 years. He got the operation, and 2 weeks later, you know, and as he was recovering, a clot formed and it went to his lung, and he had a pulmonary embolism and so died from that. So it was really unexpected. You know, I was 20 at the time. You know, we were all really, me and my mom, you know, really shocked. And, you know, sooner or later, we already allow for that to be a possibility, that everyone we know is going to die, and hopefully not soon, but if it does happen soon, it does happen. You're not like, you're shocked, but not totally shocked. Like, it's still within the realm of things that happen. At the time I was at SF State, I finished there when I was 25, and immediately after, I had been awarded a fellowship that allowed me to go to Brazil for 2 months to do some international volunteer work. And when I came back, you know, after 2 months, I was like, for the first time in my life, I wasn't in school, you know, and I was sort of feeling a bit culture shocked, feeling like, okay, now I'm here as opposed to there, and what am I doing? And then that's, you know, I was 25, like I said, and that's when I finally kind of learned, you know, this detail about, you know, my background. We were driving back from Walnut Creek to San Francisco, and I guess there's never a good time, there's never going to be an easy circumstance to learn that, you know. But this was a particularly difficult, something about being in a car and kind of like being in traffic, that's just when it happened. And she, you know, she told me, it was one of those things where she just sort of asked me, what would I think if I found out that, you know? And then that was enough. I could tell that's what that meant, you know? I instantly put on like my best Oscar award winning act and just, this is really crazy, but I'm gonna like save this for later. And right now I was just comforting her and kind of made pretend like, oh, you know, that's cool. That's not a big deal, because, you know, I just justified it. Because I wasn't angry, I was just really shocked, but I pretty much got it. And I was, because I had a good dad, you know, like my dad raised me was great, but I didn't know that, you know. And so I kind of figured, okay, I'm gonna just play it off, kind of, you know. And you know, even though, of course, I was like totally beyond freaking out, I was just, you know, in the car for another 40 minutes and just kind of did my best. And it's one of those interesting things where I would have never thought, like if someone told me that they were undergoing that situation and that they were able to play it off, it seems like, how can you? That's so crazy. But once you're in the situation, you just sort of do. You know, eventually got home and quickly went to the bathroom and started taking a shower, and was like, so I could just be alone and have the water running and, you know, just kind of trip out and just put my clothes on, and without even getting dry, I was just like, oh, you know, made an excuse, oh, I have to go do something and see someone, my friend, I'm gonna go visit her, blah, blah. I was driving and just completely just discombobulated. I went to my friend Elena's house, and I got out of the car and I could barely walk. I was just like having trouble walking. I was kind of, you know, like stooped forward and like just really feeling completely just all over the place, you know. And I told her and she was like, oh my God, that's crazy. And I was just, you know, crying. And I had already had life-altering experiences, like from the early childhood stuff to the crazy situation with my dad having been a political refugee and having undergone, like, I mean, some of the stuff he went through caused him to have amnesia sometimes. You know, then him dying, so it was like, you know, I had already had several doses of these different situations. By this point, he had already died 5 years before that. Part of me felt sort of bad for even caring about it, but I knew it was understandable that of course, anyone's gonna, like, when they learn something like that, is gonna have some kind of reaction, you know. So I was always say, oh, I'm half Guatemalan, half Salvadorian. And so once that happened, I guess I'll just say I'm Guatemalan now. It's kind of a mind fuck in a way. We never talked about it after that. You know what I mean? I just figured, okay, this is what happened, and I played it off, and I never brought it up, and I just kind of went with it. I try to keep it in perspective that I had a good dad that raised me. He was great. The fact that so many aspects of my whole upbringing and life experiences had already been so trippy to that point that this was like, okay, this was a huge one, but I could deal with it. So that was when I was 25, and when I was 28 was when I decided to become a full-time performer, or to try to be to like kind of pursue my dream of, wow, I could actually do what I always dreamed of doing. Like it was always to do my music, to actually do my music as my, how I really defined myself and who I really was just kind of like a pipe dream. At the time I was in grad school, but I was doing the academic thing and that was going on, but my real passion was music. All these experiences that happened gave me the wherewithal to say, you know what, never mind, this is what I really want to do. I want to do my music. And it was kind of like, it made me happy, and it made like all the stuff that had occurred made it worth it. I went to Montreal for 2 months. The summer between the first and the second year of grad school, I was at Berkeley thinking, okay, I'll learn French and I'll take my, I had been working on my music. So I showed up and I started playing in the Metro, and I started to make breakthroughs where my stuff just started sounding even better and people were really digging it. And then one day I knew about a big show going on. I showed up early and talked my way through the door, pretended I was part of the show. And it was this big, big, big event, you know, and just one thing led to another and someone canceled and I was there. And when I got backstage, I set up my stuff and started playing, and people were like, oh my God, who is this guy? And then someone canceled. So the promoter was like, it was one of those trippy things. I don't know how it worked, but he said, well, go ahead, you can play. And so I went, played, and stole the show. From that point on, I mean, it was like 1,000 people of the most influential aspect of the music scene there was there that night. From that point on, that was when I was like, okay, this is gonna work. So it's been, it's almost 10 years exactly. In June, it'll be 10 years since that happened. I pretty much became just so committed. I was playing at everything imaginable. Like anything and everything I could possibly play at, I was there. Whether I got paid or not, or, but people loved what I was doing, and it gave me a whole new life. Like I was starting off as a whole new person. Changing my name and my whole personality as a performer was sort of no big deal in the broader scope of what I had already kind of like had to deal with. Through my music, I was able to just totally, I guess, heal from a lot of the effects of going through that kind of shock. I mean, once I devoted myself to music and I had this whole other persona now come to the front, my real experiences were totally different. I've averaged a gig a week for a decade. I might as well be a totally different person. I mean, there's a continuity because inside I know who I am and what the backstory is and all the interesting aspects of the road that led to it. Had things not been kind of difficult, throughout, I might have settled for a more, just have a more regular thing going. But I never felt, I mean, from my earliest memory, I never quite felt well-adjusted. In the back of my mind, I was always semi-conscious that, okay, I'm going to play this off. I'm gonna go with it, and I'm going to fit in. I'll figure it out, and I'll adjust, but deep inside, I don't really belong here. I felt like I had to really try hard to figure out how to put on a facade in a way and act and to fit in and make it work. The world as we see it, as we perceive it, is so different from what's really going on and I was fascinated and almost obsessed with learning, like, how far does it go? Like, how deep does it get? Kind of like The Matrix, let's say. It was one of those things, had I had more success early on, I might have had the impression that if I joined the rat race, I might actually do pretty good, or like, it might work, and I think that's the different paths people take. If you get comfortable with thinking that, oh, okay, you can just go along and join the system and it'll work out. I didn't have that. I was like, when I was young, I realized, whoa, this system is really evil. And how is it going to fund a military brutal regime? In a lot of ways, it freed me up to find a different route. I always think of this story that it's a story that happened in England where at a slaughterhouse, two pigs managed to escape. They they were being rounded up and they got under the fence and just took off. And so for a week or so, and then they kind of became kind of like celebrities. It was like, they're running around and the kids gave them names and schools, like they became like kind of famous, whatever. And then eventually they were found. But by that point, it was kind of like, they weren't going to like slaughter them now. Like now they had already made it to the paper. And so rather than be taken back to the slaughterhouse and be slaughtered, they were taken to schools and like got to visit schools and eat well. And they were pretty much like little celebrities now. Having that impulse to say, fuck it, I'm not going to go along doing something totally different and straying from the whole herd, is like dangerous and you're going to be ostracized and it's going to suck, but it might just be the most awesome thing.